the vault. High atop the pastoral center of the Diocese of Camden, you're listening to Talking Catholic.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to Talking Catholic. This is your co-host, Mary McCusker, and I'm here with Mike Walsh on this 100-degree day it's on a Friday afternoon we're recording.
Yeah.
How are you, Mike? You look a little drained.
I hate the heat. I really do. This is like my worst time of year. I am not a fan of these steamy days. People are always like, it's the mid-Atlantic. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
We get pretty ugly around here. It's not quite New Orleans, but it's not that great.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're recording late on a Friday, just how things sort of worked out, which is always so, you know, the energy's really low right now. The patience
Speak
is really
for yourself,
low right now.
I just chugged some coffee.
Okay. Well, then you can lead this entire podcast.
Oh, no,
Mary.
Don't do that.
Not a problem.
Do you have any weekend plans?
Yes, I will be.
Heard it's a busy weekend.
It is. It's one of the busiest, actually. The Feast of the Assumption is this weekend, mm-hmm. the vigil and the solemnity. So I will be doing our usual coverage of those feasts, those masses, but also with them in our shore parishes. They have the Wedding of the Sea ceremonies. So I'll be down in Wildwood on Saturday. We'll also be recording a podcast 5 hours before it, so I'll be down there very early. But we're recording a podcast. Carrie's going to do it. We've been wanting to do this podcast series for a while, where we went to like shore restaurants, shore locations to do like just to talk to Catholics down there working businesses and stuff like that. And for whatever reason this year, they didn't materialize until the very end of the summer. So we'll be down there talking to some diner owners that we're looking forward to. But we have the Mass later in the afternoon, and then the procession for the Wedding of the Sea in Wildwood, which if you haven't been to the Wedding of the Sea, a lot of shore towns do them nowadays. It's basically an opportunity for the bishop or the priest to go out into a boat and bless the ocean as a sign of the unity between the people on the land and the opportunity that the ocean brings to people who live by the water. So it's an old, I think it's Sicilian custom.
Yeah.
It's definitely Italian.
Every time I hear it, I think of your award-winning photograph of Bishop with the boat in the air at like a 90-degree angle. Yeah. And like my heart starts racing just looking at it. It's like I can feel, it's a visceral reaction.
He comes back in every year soaked to the bone. And he does it 2 days in a row because he does it first in Wildwood and then he does it the next day in Atlantic City. So I'll be down in Atlantic City on Sunday around 2 for their Mass and their procession and their Wedding of the Sea. But yeah, the fun part of it is to watch Bishop go out into the breakers. And I told him the year he gets kicked out of the boat because a big wave hit him, that's the year I end up winning like a nice AP award or something like that. That'll be fun. So I'm always rooting for him to get launched. Not hurt, of course, but always launched. But
you would say such a thing.
Well, only for the benefit of the paper, though, which actually we should also talk about that, too. The Catholic Star Herald this week, a massive edition of the paper. Where, as a matter of fact, Bishop leads off with a great column continuing his priesthood series, where he talks about his years in the mid to late 70s when he was at a parish, I'm pretty sure in the Bronx, and actually has a great photograph of him and then Mayor Ed Koch walking down through the parish at an event. It kind of talks about the importance of, you know, understanding that the Catholicism, the Catholic Church, is a global, universal church. And it was, I think if I remember correctly, that was sort of continuing his path of, for most of his years as a pastor, he worked in highly diverse parishes.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to get used to learning completely new languages, and not just new languages, but new cultures within the languages. So it's a great sort of explanation of why he is the way he is
today. That pastoral side to him and the way he just understands how people live and everyday people live and work. It really is. I've been loving that series. So
have I. It's been a great read, and I'm very happy he's continued it. Actually, we weren't expecting a column from him this week because we were so busy. Another large portion of the paper this week is a special tribute to Martin McKernan.
Mm-hmm.
And, I may have talked about him a little bit on the last podcast, but I, if you haven't yet or haven't seen it come across your Catholic news, but Martin McKernan was a diocesan attorney for 50 years, but he was so much more than that. He was integral to how Catholicism sort of was shaped in New Jersey from a sort of legal and political perspective. He was incredibly, I don't know if the word is influential, that might not be the best use of the word, but he was a hard worker for the Catholic Church. So his funeral was last week, and Cardinal Tobin came down for it. Bishop Cecchio was there. Bishop DiMarzio from the Diocese of Brooklyn was there, who was one of our former bishops in the early 2000s in Camden. And just a great turnout of people and his family and priests. And I mean, pretty much everything that's happened in the state of New Jersey, and certainly everything that's happened in the Diocese of Camden, Martin was a part of from a, you know, legal perspective.
Right.
And quite frankly, you know, I'm an aged professional at this point, so there aren't too many mentors in my life, but I would definitely classify Martin as one of them. He really took me under his wing when I got here, gave me a bunch of sage advice that even as someone who's been doing this for 20 years, it was really helpful to me. And he was also just a great person to bounce an idea off of.
Yeah.
But more than that, he was the most spiritual human being I've ever met. So you and I have been around attorneys most of our lives, and I let it known how little appreciation I have for most attorneys. However, he was truly one of the best.
He was wonderful. He was a good friend of Catholic Charities, too, for many years. I know we'll miss him a lot there. Yeah.
And our Catholic schools and others. So,
and everyone, really.
Yeah. So we
will all miss him very much.
I think it's the longest article we ever put in the Star Herald. It's over 3,000 words, not that many photos. Because he could have been a CIA agent, he just never got his photo taken. but it's a great thing. And then the remainder of the paper is about there's a lot of stories about Catholic schools reopenings, our back to school issues. So there's a lot of that, and of course, you know, a big FAQ about COVID rules related to schools reopening. I am happy to say that all the schools in the Diocese of Camden will be open for 5 days a week. They will be following the mask mandates from the state of New Jersey, so the kids will be wearing masks. But the students and the teachers and the parents are thrilled that we're going to be back and open and everyone's going to be there. And fortunately, there's going to be more extracurricular activity this year we're happy about. So there'll be sports and there'll be plays and, you know, they may be wearing masks, but they're going to be as active as at any time. And quite frankly, my son went through the entire thing last year, and he doesn't even bat his eye when it comes to the masks. So
Kids are tough. It's amazing how they get used to certain things. And
yeah. I didn't hear a report from a single parent I talked to a lot who ever said anything about their kids had any issues wearing masks. About the high school kids didn't care because they just wanted not to be hassled. They didn't want to have to go back to remote learning. And the little kids, they pick up on this stuff so quick. It was really just the middle school kids that were having problems with it. But my son's a middle school kid, and he didn't have any problem with it. So I'm very pleased.
It's an angsty time, middle school. So.
And I will also do one proud father thing. Last night, he was at baseball camp, and he hit his first home run, over-the-fence home run. So I was very excited about that. Yeah, so that was a big deal for him. And he desperately didn't want to go. He tried talking me out of camp left and right because he wanted to stay home and play video games. And I was like, no, you're going to camp. He's like, my arm hurts. I was like, I'll give you Advil. You'll be fine. And
that is a happy dad moment right there.
I will admit.
That makes me so...
Yeah. I was very pleased. So good job, Jack, hitting your first home run. It was scrimmage, but I still say it counts. It went over the fence. Still counts.
Yes.
How about you? How's your weekend looking? I'm not making you do any of the weddings of the sea.
No, you're not. And I'm not entirely sure what my weekend will be yet, but a nap for sure.
Oh, that's good. I will tell the listeners who have often heard about and you have made fun of me about that I never take vacation time. I am actually taking vacation next week. I'm recording a podcast beforehand.
We'll see about that when I get a text about something work-related or an email that, you know.
Well, that's the problem is I bring
workaholic.
Work with me everywhere. Yeah, but I am going to be away from the diocese. So if you're listening to this next week and you want to say, hey, I'm going to call Mike and harass him about something, it's not going to work. I'm not going to be here. But I'm going to be up in the Poconos attempting to be relaxed and chill. We'll see if that happens.
I hope there's no reception so you can actually
take
a break in the PR world.
I helped rebuild this house, which means I also helped install the Wi-Fi. So I'll be very – but maybe when I'm outside of the house, you guys won't be able to get a hold of me.
Yeah, good.
So I'm looking forward to that. So, Mary, I'm very excited about today's episode because we – okay, so in the 250 roughly episodes we've had, I've had – two, all the time I get requests for two sets of interviews. One, everybody wants to know when I'm going to interview Bishop Sullivan. And that's probably never going to happen. And it's never going to happen because Bishop Sullivan's words are everywhere. So it's like, I don't need to bring him on the podcast. Just read his column, go to his masses, do anything you want. He's all over the place.
He doesn't
have to be on the podcast. But the other one I get all the time is for Mike and Molly Bettix.
Yep.
Mike, the wonderful, actually, honestly, Molly and Mike Bettix, because nobody really cares about Mike. Everyone wants to know about Molly.
No, and I'll tell you why. Already taking shots at our guests.
No. I'll tell you why. So if you're not familiar with Molly and Mike Bettix, it's because they don't necessarily go by their name. Last year, I mean, they do go by their name, but for our purposes, their name isn't put out there very often. Last year when the pandemic really hit, we started live streaming Bishop's Masses from the chapel in the attic of his residence.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was terrible. The acoustics were awful. It was cramped.
About that. Yep.
It was this little A-frame attic. It looks beautiful, but it's not a great area for recording a mass. So after about 2 or 3 weeks of that, Bishop had the brilliant idea to move us back to the cathedral.
Yes.
And I don't know, we got to find out from our guests who came up with this idea, but someone said we need to have music. And mm-hmm. so we need to invite some musicians on. And fortunately, one of them worked for the diocese, so he couldn't say no. And the other one is married to him, and apparently he must have found some way of paying her off, because she would come every Sunday, and she was a delight. And what would happen is, so the first couple of times we did the live streams, very little comments, very little interaction. As soon as the music became a part of it, it was constantly, oh, I love Molly Bettix. Oh, I love the music. The music, oh, it lifted my heart. So much response.
I would get notifications on my phone when it would blow up with comments on the live streams. It's true.
And people absolutely loved them.
Yep.
Now, John Kalitz, who helps Light, no one doesn't have help, but ran the live streams with me every year, would see Molly and Mike there, every week would see Molly and Mike there, and we were in the room with them, and we're like, yeah, they're all right, they're nothing big, but these people would get, no, that's not true, they were phenomenal. So we started getting all these requests. Well, getting Molly and Mike to do anything requires, you know, incredible forethought, because they have this big family, they're very busy lives. So it took a long time to get them on. However, joining us today is Molly and Mike Bettix. Molly, how are you?
Doing all right. Thanks for having us, I think.
Now, I should say, Molly has no desire to be here right now.
None whatsoever.
But I was somehow able to wear her down and bring her on. And Mike, so happy to see you.
Happy to see you, too.
Now, Mike
Thanks
and
for
I,
having me.
Mike and I get to spend quite a bit of time together, because our lives intersect a lot.
Just enough time together.
Just enough. Not
just about the right amount.
That's exactly
we'll see
right.
By the end of this podcast, we'll reach the limit.
This hour is going to throw everything off. But the truth of the matter is, you know, you two coming to be a part of the live streams last year really did elevate them a lot. So I am curious, the first question is, how did you get roped into doing it?
I have to remember, but I think it was Father Hughes reached out to me after Bishop decided to move the live stream mass over to the cathedral, and he had just said, we want to have music for these masses, so can you take care of it?
And
that's pretty
sounds
much
like a big task.
Well, that's how a lot of things go around here.
And at first, honestly, my thought was, you know, we'll do, because we were, I think, we had maybe one more Sunday of Lent, and then Palm Sunday, or maybe Palm Sunday might have even been the first one. I really don't remember. But it was either the last Sunday of Lent or Palm Sunday was the starting point. So I figured we'd do, through Easter. And then I thought maybe we'd bring in some other musicians from around the diocese and do it. But we didn't know where we were. This was brand new, the pandemic. Yeah. So after talking again with Father Hughes, we said, now let's just keep it to us. We just didn't want people coming in and out, you know, just for the contact and everything. So so it ended up being us for the whole run. But that we did go back and forth a little bit on, you know, how exactly should we do it. But once we started, we figured, you know, we're here. We don't want to, you know, have people coming, you know, too many people coming in and out. So.
And Molly, how did you agree to listen to your overbearing husband?
Oh, oh my gosh.
Wow. I remember saying, like, there's a lot of talented people in the diocese, like, I can do one, but then maybe we should rotate. But he kind of convinced me that since we already have each other's cooties, that it would be best if we both just stick to the two of us. And then we did have fun, you know, getting to spend time with you guys, and it was, you know, get us out of the house, and it made our parents happy.
Aww.
And there was
Aww.
Breakfast afterwards, so
that was a benefit.
I'm a sucker for a free meal.
Exactly. I did not anticipate that, but I've learned since that feeding the bishop is very important when you have him in the church, and so, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're around at those events, then you get to partake.
Yeah, exactly.
So we had some nice breakfast.
We did. That was great. Except
Father Fisher and Brother Mickey,
yeah.
too.
I only missed one breakfast, and fortunately, it was the one that Scrapple was served at, and I hate Scrapple,
oh
so I was
gosh.
Very happy to miss that one.
Yeah,
that was a terrible one. However, yeah, but the events ended up being really nice, and it was kind of a nice sort of like team atmosphere because it was just us every single week doing the same thing over and again. But the music really did, in all fairness, and quite complimentary, the two of you really did elevate the Mass to another level by including the music. And on top of that, in a time when things were a little depressed, the music was actually quite uplifting.
Mm-hmm. And grounding, know, like you're actually there.
Yeah.
There's not that something that's missing. And I think a lot of people realized it's the music component.
Yeah, and that's true. So, you know, Mike, so before we get into that again, let's talk a little bit about what you do, because quite frankly, I don't understand. Mike is the director of the Office of Worship and Christian Initiation in the Diocese of Camden. I always find the simplest way to explain half of your job is to refer to you as the chief liturgist. Would that be an acceptable way of putting it?
Probably not,
okay.
Because I would be the assistant chief liturgist. Because
okay,
in our liturgy world, the bishop is always the chief liturgist
okay.
of the diocese.
Assistant chief
So
liturgist.
I would be stealing the bishop's title if I called myself chief liturgist of the diocese.
Okay. Then I will amend my future references to
okay.
you. But so your role, what do you it's, you sort of have a two-sided role, and they don't necessarily go together.
They do and they don't. There's a worship is, you know, is the liturgy piece mm-hmm. of it. So, you know, to offer advice when needed for what we're doing liturgically. Now the office, all of the music obviously falls within the liturgy realm as well too. So, you know, being musician, then I right now it's easy to take care of the music because we're dealing with small groups and not full choirs. So, you know, God willing, the day will come when we have choirs again, and, you know, we'll have to bring a full diocesan choir back, and then, you know, we'll figure out how to do that when we get there. So it's a little easier for me to take care of both the music and the liturgy piece right now. Part of the job is running the School of Liturgy trainings currently, which are for extraordinary ministers, Holy Communion, and lectors. God willing, we'll be able to expand that as we keep moving forward here with offering training for musicians and other ministries, et cetera, et cetera. I look over the material that comes in whenever a bishop is going out to a parish for a confirmation or a celebration. I'll look through the parish's planning materials to make sure everything is in order for when he goes so that...
No surprises,
yes. Thank you.
Excellent way of putting that.
Yes, thank you. So that there are no, or as little number of surprises as possible. I'll do that. And then the Christian initiation piece of it is it was known as RCIA. Mm-hmm. So I'm here as a resource for parish RCIA programs. Because it's the program's a ritual in and of itself, so I believe that's why it's closely connected to liturgy, because the public moments of RCIA are all liturgical rites. So that's when the parish really sees our folks that are in the RCIA program. But the other half of it really would be to be connected to what's now the Office of Religious Education, because mm-hmm. there's no clear directives in RCIA of how to form people, you know, mm-hmm. what are they supposed to know? What are they supposed to get? What are they supposed to, you know, sort of be instilled with before they're baptized or initiated? That's not really spelled out. So, you know, a parish will really need to connect with the Catholic Education Office to decide, you know, who they have and what do they need to know and how can we do that in our parish. But for the public ritual moments, that would be more within the liturgical world, you know, for me to help parishes to know what to celebrate and when and how and things like that. So
I think the natural follow-up to that question is anyone who understands the Catholic Church knows there are a lot of rituals. There's a lot of elements to our Catholic faith from a mass and service perspective. How does one find themselves in that? I mean, that's a lot of information you need to retain and or be able to find.
Right.
And I have to imagine that it takes years to sort of cultivate. So how do you end up in this kind of a role?
Well, it's not necessarily remembering and knowing all of that information, but no, like you said, knowing where to find it, you know, so having all of the ritual books on your shelf and knowing what is in each one and what everything covers so that when these questions do come up, you know, I may not have all these answers on the tip of my tongue, but we know where to find them and we know how to help folks to find them. Yeah. So I'm trying to think of an example, but nothing's coming to my head at the moment, but
yeah. So that sounds like so many different hats that you wear for the musical element. How did you get into that? And then I want to ask Molly the same question.
The music came to me first grade, maybe even kindergarten. I don't remember exactly when I started playing, but we had an organ in our house. So my So most folks grew up playing piano.
Yeah.
I actually grew up playing organ because there was
it's still there in my parents' house.
Just one of the small like two manual like eight pedal one octave of pedal
little home organ kind of a thing. That's awesome.
So that's what we had, and that was also my mom's instrument growing up, and my aunt's. They both played organ for their church.
Wow.
Growing up, they lived right across the street in South Bethlehem from the parish that they grew up at. So they would walk across the street to church in the morning. My mom and my aunt both played organ for their church. So they had the organ in the home. So I learned playing that. So that was the first musical something, I guess.
And that was all the way back in kindergarten.
Kindergarten, first grade. And yep, and it's a very long, winding story from then till now.
So.
But that's not a simple instrument to pick up. I mean, that's a wee bit more complicated than, say, learning to play the keyboard.
A little bit, because you have the two manuals and then your feet, you know, so you get
your feet.
You get all four limbs going right from the get-go, you know, like, yeah, keyboard, you're usually learning with your two hands. And then with piano, of course, you know, you bring a foot pedal in or, you know, a couple pedals into it later. Organ, you're all in right away. So.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, is that, so I, we should probably mention, by the way, if anyone is not aware, that in the Diocese of Camden, once a month, we actually have a pipe organ recital at our 100-year-old, with our 100-year-old organ, pipe organ, at the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception in Camden, which was just rehabbed over the last several years. They have a great Camden Cathedral pipe organ fund if you'd like to donate to it. But we live stream these recitals monthly. We just had one actually with Andrew Ennis was our guest organist, although hardly a guest organist when you consider he's the rector's.
He is, yeah, he's there. And he's done a great job with that rehab and renovation too.
Yeah, it's really been phenomenal. And so if anybody wants to actually see the pipe organ in action and our organists at work, you can actually check that out on the Diocese of Camden's YouTube page and Facebook page. Do you recall off the top of your head when the next one's coming up?
The next one is September 15th, and that'll be Dr. Ted Kiefer, who has played for diocesan events, a previous diocesan director of music in the diocese as well, too, years ago.
Wow.
He'll be doing the September recital. Excellent organist, too.
And I think we can also announce that one Mike Bedix will be doing his first recital in December.
I'm going to try for December.
It's out there now.
I know. Well, I need some practice time. The job keeps me so busy. I don't get to just sit down and play whenever I want to.
I don't know. I've seen where your office is related to the pipe organ. It is quite literally a 4-minute walk. I'm sure Father Fisher will open up the cathedral for you.
Oh, he told me he told me I can go over there anytime I want. So we're making time though.
I'm looking forward to it.
I reached out to some different organists around the diocese, so we have the fall lined up, and I'm trying to do December because it's such a busy time. Mm-hmm. December, getting ready for Christmas, so I really don't want to put that burden on any parish music director to do a December recital, so I'm going to try to work up an Advent program for December.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to it because I've certainly seen you play piano a lot on all of our live streams, and I actually, at Martin's funeral, you were playing organ at that, but we didn't have you on camera for that. We had Ted Baker on camera for that. By the way, I should mention that my mom was watching the live stream, and because it was a very tight focus, she was like, "How many people were there? Because it sounded big and beautiful." And I said, "Actually, Mom, it was just we had 7 people there altogether, and you guys made a lot of great noise and with not that many people."
And that's about the number we've been using for the ordinations and chrism mass, and just about 4 to 6 singers and piano and organ and an instrument or two.
But it sounds great.
It's been going well.
You made my mom happy.
Good musicians. We have some good talent in this diocese.
Well, and that's one of So that ended up being one of our hidden discoveries, at least from my perspective. So we'd been doing, by the time the live streams rolled around, we had done a ton of other events. Mm-hmm. And I got to know some of the other cantors and singers that are in the diocese. But one day, this tiny woman, Molly, rolls up. And whom wow. she is, she's like, she's serious, she's like hobbit sized.
Oh my God.
And she
wouldn't
rolled,
say that.
She's very small. And
hobbit sized. She doesn't look like a hobbit. She's just hobbit
right.
sized.
Oh my gosh.
Just sized wise, she's small.
I don't know what any of that means.
So she rolls in, and I'm like, I thought I knew all of the major singers in the diocese, but okay, whatever. And then I find out later, oh, okay, so she has the misfortune of being married to Mike, and I said, okay, that's why she brought him there. And then she opens her mouth, and I'm like, oh my, she's an angel. It's like she's got these incredible pipes. So 2 questions. Where have you been hiding? And B, what brought you to singing?
Okay. What was the first one?
Yeah, right.
Where have I been hiding? Well, I'm a hobbit, so obviously.
Yeah, I'm still not over that comment.
You're 6 feet tall. You don't know what a hobbit is.
5'11". I don't want to talk about it.
She's been hiding in the Shire.
In the Shire.
Wow. So I guess I've been hiding at Christ Our Light. So Mike was the music director there. He had a long title there as well.
Yeah.
And so we would canter. I do at least one mass a weekend, but I was always there to, because I lived down the street, and if there was ever in a pinch, I would be, driving up and doing 2 or 3 masses a weekend. Yeah. So it was kind of what, pastors in the past have called a twofer.
Uh-huh.
So like a 2 for the price of 1 sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But luckily I enjoy singing, especially at church. Not a great prayer all the time, so that is my way to pray. So when we can kind of put the world aside and step into that space and be in the words and in the music, that's a gift to me, really.
Well, that's wonderful, actually.
Yeah.
And
so,
did you always have a passion for singing going back to kindergarten like Mike? Or?
I think so. Yeah, I think I've always loved singing. My dad actually is a great singer who no one alive will ever hear sing except for our own family. Mm. A lot of growing up here in Billy Joel and Tracy Chapman records at home. And so... Boy George and the Culture Club. But anyways.
Also good. Okay.
And it was really church children's choir where I started singing. And eventually, as time went on, we got a new music director. And I'll never forget my sister turning around and being like, "Oh, my God, is that Mike Bettix? Is that Mike Bettix?" And I was like, "Who the heck is Mike Bettix?" Like, I didn't know who they were talking about. And I turned, and up in the choir loft was this guy with a ponytail because he had a long, long hair and a ponytail.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm going to need some photos sent to me.
Right.
You don't mind? It's michael.walsh at camdiocese.org. Okay.
So my sisters knew him from youth group. And so he became our choir director, and so we were all part of the adult choir, and that's how we kind of got to know each other and
wow.
sing more. And then he moved to another parish, and I followed him there. We did, the Life Teen program and a lot of more contemporary Christian music. So that's kind of, I just kind of followed Mike around and he let me sing stuff.
Wow.
Well. Happening till this day, apparently.
Well, that's a perfectly, actually, that's adorable, aww, as a matter of fact.
Right?
As,
I was also following her around, aww, too.
Though. I was going to say.
He kept leaving. I just want to put that out there.
Well, you know. If there's one thing I know about guys, it takes us a long time to figure things out. But I hear you. You guys end up being a musical couple.
Yes.
And then last year I find out, or around Christmas time, that not only are they a musical couple, it's a musical family. So in addition to a desire to have Molly and Mike on the podcast at some point, we had also been getting tons of requests for a Molly and Mike special. So last year we were kicking around ideas during Advent, and John Kalitz, God bless him, based on nothing more than the title alone, pitched, can we do a very special Mike and Molly Bedex Christmas? Bedex Christmas, yeah.
It just rolled right off the tongue.
With not even having talked to Molly and Mike about it, I greenlit it right away. Said, this is a fantastic idea. We have to do it. So I was expecting Molly and Mike to roll up like they usually do. Just, you know, get out there and start singing. And here comes children behind them who ended up being talented. So let me, how to put this? You have talented artistic children. Was that something you cultivated, or did they have just the bad instincts to follow their parents? It's like,
I don't know. I think the answer is always a little bit of both.
So,
in all things, they're talented of their own accord. But you know, but we've tried to provide them the opportunities to find what they like as well too. You know, try different instruments. You know, try this. Try, you know, they all sang in the children's choir at Christ Our Light. And then, you know, tried some different instruments and different activities and see what falls into place.
I think they find a certain amount of, I don't know, call it self-care or something, but something about playing music and being involved in music really has been just good for them from a mental health perspective, just like for us. You know, our son drums a lot, you know, when he's feeling good, and he drums when he's not feeling good, and sometimes the whole neighborhood hears it, you know. But we always just say, like, thank God he's a good drummer. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's loud, but thank God it's good, you know. I don't know.
Do they play together? And is there competition? I want to know that.
Sometimes we'll catch them, like, one of the best worst things is when it's like someone's birthday and at the end they all harmonize, you know? It's like super corny, but kind of like, yeah, it's kids, you know?
That's awesome.
And they also can do the reverse because they also intentionally sang me the worst Happy Father's Day to You this past Father's Day.
It was super
rough. Know, because of their ability to deliberately sing in multiple keys at the same time.
Wow.
It was entertaining and horrifying all at the same time. So
I want to be around your house on the holidays and witness all this.
Well, I can also announce that there is going to be a very special Bedex 2, which we've already decided. So
I guess we should mark our calendar for this event that we didn't know was happening.
He has a habit of just announcing things on air.
Yeah, I find if you just announce it.
Right,
yeah, I find if you just announce it.
Manifests
it really cuts down on the nose I get.
I'm looking at my calendar right now just to see if I'm free.
All of December.
Oh, I think I'm on vacation.
Every priest I know that has a conflict, it's always, I got a funeral that day.
Oh, right.
3 months out? Yep, I got a funeral that day.
Like,
all right, here you go. That's the thing, is that it was thoroughly enjoyable last year. You know, last year was such a weird year.
Yeah.
And we really did try to do some like fun things and mix things up a little bit. And what we found was, because I'm not a big fan of thinking of things in terms of silver linings, but when you're faced with a pandemic and you have to sort of alter everything, it ends up creating all these new opportunities. Mm-hmm. For me, it was an opportunity. Well, we were able to do a lot of stuff, but I got to meet a lot of new people, like Molly, who's absolutely lovely. And we question her taste in men, but she is one of the nicest human beings I've ever
met.
Incredibly funny, too. That's the other thing. and this great singer. And I'm like, all right, well, we already know Mike is talented. Now we find out that Molly's talented. Now we find out the family's talented. Last year, what we did
was... What else are they hiding from us?
Well, I'll tell you this. a very special Bedex Christmas 2... I want a family all dressed the same in red and green. I want to go full North Pole or
okay. All right. I expect snow.
Saint Nicholas
and a green room.
You got it.
Snow all right.
Green room we can provide. Green room, snow might be a little
snow,
harder.
Snow machines.
But you know last year's
disco ball.
Do disco balls go with?
I don't even know.
Well, it's
know.
Christmas. Snow. You can kind of create
this. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm back.
With all right, I'm back, you know, in. I'm back
something
in.
Something like that. I don't know.
Yep. See, these are creative people here. I should just say yes to everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we kind of threw that on you last year with very little preparation, as I recall. And it ended up being great. Was it difficult to get the kids to be a part of it, or did they kind of relish the opportunity?
We find if we don't, like, mandate it, it goes a little better. It's just kind of like, hey, we're doing this thing. It'd be cool if you joined us. Mm-hmm. No pressure.
It's a good approach.
You know?
Yeah.
Because if it's, like, our idea and our, like, mandate, it doesn't go over, yeah, like, then... as well, I would say. Our youngest was kind of, like, not feeling the cameras, which I totally get. The live stream was terrifying for me, like... couple minutes in, I don't like the talking.
Oh, right.
We worked out the talking, and then all of a sudden I blanked and I was like, this is live and I have no idea what I was supposed to say next. So that was terrifying. So will it be like live streamed, or will it be like live people, or we just don't know?
Here's what I'm not sure. I don't know why we did it as a live stream last year. The reasoning must have been because of the Facebook algorithms, and that was the reason we did it live. The truth of the matter is, pre-recording it would be perfectly fine, except for one small little problem. I don't know if you know this about your husband, but the dude gets into the minutiae so much that I'm afraid if I gave him time to think about a song, we'd end up re-recording it 6 times.
Okay.
So whereas if we just record an hour straight, there's nothing you can do about
the Band-Aid,
it. That's right. If we tape it, he's going to want to redo it 6 or 7 times. So Molly, how much can you put up with that? You want to do it live now, don't you?
I don't know. I just meant where they're like humans. Will be real humans there, not just you, just real humans.
Yeah, I like the authenticity of going out and stuff like that. And you were great. I know you were nervous, but it did not come across in the live streams.
Well, that's something I want to know from both of you. Do you still get, if you ever did get nerves, like before a mass or an event? They're both nodding their heads.
All the time.
Like, before, is that something you get used to over time? Or
it is.
I think it's just more of the like anticipation of like, is this gonna go right? Is this gonna go right? Like, he's sometimes a basket case. Like, when there's like a big event coming up, it's just
he's never seen that.
I know you don't see it. I get it. You don't see it.
They've learned to hide it.
No, but
it's from midnight to 6 a.m.
Right? It really is.
I mean, every song is just running through my brain like all night.
But with
long.
This new role, it's more than just songs, right? It's like, is everything in the bishop's book? Is every, you know, did I miss anything? Did I put that page in right? You know. All the little things that could go wrong when humans are involved in a liturgy, you know?
That's a good point.
So we definitely get nervous. I either get really sweaty or my hands are super cold. But then once...
Usually cold.
I feel like once we get past, like, into and past that gathering song and it went okay, then I feel like we're usually... for me, I feel like, okay, this is going to be all right.
For me, too. Maybe it's not the gathering song, but the whatever that first... moment is that just sort of falls into place, then I'm kind of like, okay,
Spirit's going to do this. Oh,
you know,
okay.
Maybe I had to manage a little bit too much during the gathering song. I'm still a little edgy, but then the glory to God kind of just fell right into place. Then I'm like, all right, good, okay.
Yeah. Now, what's like the worst thing that could go wrong? Like, what's a musician's worst fear when it comes to this kind of stuff?
You want to go first?
I don't know. For me, just I think from over the years, it's not so much a musical thing, but it's like PA system, sound system stuff.
Well, Mike can relate to that.
Oh, that's different. It just drives me crazy. Because there are live gremlins that live in sound equipment. They're in there, and they mess with you, and they do what they want to do when they want to do it.
Yep.
Like you can test all the equipment. You know, Friday night, and everything works perfectly. You don't touch a thing. You turn it on Saturday morning for the event, and somebody's mic's broken. Or you know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that drives me crazy.
Yeah, don't worry about that. But yeah, he does.
Right.
Yeah. For me, it's like, I don't, disclaimer, I don't read music.
That's a surprise.
So my entrances, like if I'm going to come in at the right time, if it's just Mike and me, like, okay, like I don't come in the right time. He just figures it out and then I come in another time.
Yeah.
If there's instruments, like I could derail the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That, Mike, has she ever derailed the entire thing?
No.
Okay.
It's come close though. You know it. You could say it.
But it's probably been my fault. So.
Oh, what a good husband.
That was a good one.
Man. That's, I don't know when you're anniversary.
But that's how I am though. Like that, you know, I take it upon myself to make sure I'm giving those clear cues to everybody.
But he does, so that's helpful.
Because I've never directed with my hands, you know, from
I was going to say, how does that work? Is
right,
eye
from,
contact?
From college on in all of the music director jobs or positions I've had, I've always led from the organ or keyboard.
Yeah.
So it's either eye contact or bouncing up and down to keep a beat. But even directing children's choirs and whatnot, right. You know, it's I just try to direct through what I'm playing.
Yeah,
you know, and it's tricky
with all four limbs on something at once. It doesn't even dawn on me how is one supposed to lead, but. Like you said,
it doesn't happen overnight. But it's something
like
you learn to do it over the years too. Mm-hmm. So.
See, now I feel guilty. Like all this behind the scenes stuff that goes into like making these events and masses happen. It's like I feel like a lot of people, including myself, until now, you know, there's some setup involved, but you really don't think twice about like just how much is involved.
Oh, yeah.
And like when he has to iron. Deacon vestments at home.
So,
I'm like, why is there another vestment here? I have enough laundry. He doesn't make me do it, but I just...
Well, you told me that the other day. I was like, that never even occurred to me that would
fall.
Yeah,
we were getting...
He brought one home last night. He's like, this one has like blue and purple on it. I was like, were they eating a cupcake? Like, I don't understand.
Kool-Aid. I don't know. They're drinking Kool-Aid.
Oh, my goodness.
They're playing with crayons. I don't know.
Did you know that that was going to be part of your job responsibility?
No, absolutely not. No. I mean, I knew that the vestments were on the third floor there or whatever, but that's it. Like, you know, we're getting ready for Martin McKernan's funeral, and with more bishops are coming, and there's a lot of clergy there, so we needed the... You know, there's these different vestments that the concelebrants on the altar wear. They have like extra stripe on them, and we keep those on the third floor. And they just came back after chrism. They were just wrinkled. They looked so bad. And we need three of them to put on multiple bishops. And I was like, I can't do it. So the night before, I was ironing these things.
You need like 8 ironing boards to spread one of those out.
Yeah,
though,
right.
You know?
And they're huge. These are big, heavy vestments too. So, you know, it's like, this was not part of the job description.
That little bullet point that says other responsibilities is
right,
needed.
Yeah, exactly. But it is. I mean, like, you got to do it. Somebody's got to do it. It's got to get done. And it's the night before. So what am I going to do?
Right.
But it's funny. I kept one of them, one of the deacon vestments I brought back home. I didn't take it back after the events at Christ Our Light because of those. I'm like, all right, I'm going to try to hit this with the stain thing and get the dry cleaner bag out and see if I can get this little red spot. It must have dripped some wine on it or something.
Yeah.
And of course, I have it hanging there. Molly's like, why is this thing still in the house?
Yeah, right.
You just got rid of all the 8 that were hanging out here over last weekend. And I said, well, I'm going to try to get this spot out. And Father Adam texted me, oh, can I have the 2 deacon vestments for the wedding of the sea events this weekend?
So
one of them's at my house. So I had to run home after the meeting this morning and go get it. And I'm like, here you go.
So I feel like this is a good point to ask a question that Mike actually wrote down for once, which he rarely ever does, because I'm thinking about how stressful this must get at times. And I was going to ask, how do you like relieve some of that stress? And one of the questions right in front of me says, why do they like running? Are they crazy?
I will never understand people that run.
I appreciated that question, and now I'm curious.
Yeah, how do you get into running? Now, you're both very fit, so I obviously the running is working nicely. But how does one go? You're an artist, but also a runner?
So I ran cross country in like grade school, high school, college. So that was always just... I played a lot of sports, actually, but that was the one sport that stuck through college. And there's something, I guess, because it's one of those sports you can kind of do your whole life long. You don't need to go find a team to play it, you know?
Yeah,
so,
good point.
So it's always been kind of like a stress reliever for me. Like, it's a struggle to get up and actually do it, but once we've gone out and run, we were glad that we did. So we just have to kind of take turns motivating each other to get out of bed in the morning.
The hardest part is
right?
just getting
there and doing it, but...
Mike, do you enjoy writing?
I do, yeah. I mean, I think I kind of followed suit with Molly being a runner, too. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, volleyball was my sport in high school and college. And so I would sometimes, I lived about 2 miles from campus in Bethlehem. And so I would run to volleyball practice and then run home just for some added running. Because you don't do a lot of running playing volleyball. Yeah. It's a different exercise. Yeah. So I would do that like before and after. And I guess, and then, the running just kind of stuck
the
same
way. But the pandemic does definitely
that
stepped
got
up
us
our game.
Back out together running.
We really just had to get out of the house. Like, mm-hmm.
Well, house full of kids.
Yeah, it was kind of, our mental health break. It was, we'd call it, I don't know, it'd be like a date. As close as we could get to a date.
So I can respect that.
We started doing some different runs and stuff, and a lot of the runs that we were able to find happened to be like at wineries. So that it was like it was more of a date. You know, you would run, and then you'd get a free glass of wine at the end. So that was motivating.
That's a good deal.
As well. Yeah. So
all right.
I cannot imagine running with I kind of want to try that.
See? Oh,
get a good
she said
buzz
it. She
on
said
and
it.
Well, start skipping around. And
it's after. You drink after, Mare.
I'm picturing it as one of those, like, they have those things, don't they? The Santa beer thing where, something
a little different, honey. Those are bar crawls.
Right, yes. Just to be clear, we're not running with a bottle of wine in our hand.
It's turned. So we should try it sometime and let's see how it goes.
They make those things, those little water jugs that go in your bag.
Yes.
And you see that
filled
with wine.
That's what I'm saying.
So
we have one.
I can't. I cannot run with like stuff on me that I can't do it. But Molly will wear the camel backpack every now and then.
See, my knees are shredded, so I can't run at all. But I bike ride.
Okay.
And
there you go.
What they have for that are bikes and beers.
Okay.
You do like 10, 15, 50 miles,
that's
and then you come back.
Treacherous, actually.
No. Once again, after you're done, Mary. After you're done. So the key is after you're done.
I don't know what event I'm thinking of, but I could have sworn there's something on the go, but...
I'm sure there is.
Well, that's probably true. Just hopefully not on major highways or byways.
Yeah,
right.
Did you guys realize you were becoming diocesan famous at all while you were doing the live streams?
That's a thing.
If that is, you were
diocesan famous. I've never heard this before.
Mike and Molly Bettix. I'm always hearing that all the time.
I apologize that I didn't let you guys know, but you were famous, quite frankly.
Wow.
I mean, each of you were name-checked constantly on the live streams. Legitimately, I was asked. No, it was true. Well, I know you had family watching because one of your parents had commented on one of them. I guess it was maybe Molly's.
Probably.
Oh, that's so cute.
And it was
when
adorable.
Parents do that.
But, I mean, did anyone reckon, anyone mention to you?
People have said, like, during the pandemic, you really helped us a lot. And we're like, we were so isolated there as much as we had you guys. There's not that feedback, that eye contact.
True.
Yeah.
So you left there being like, hope that went well. So people have mentioned it.
You never went back and watched any of our masses to see how you did?
I don't like that. To do that so much. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we'll just listen. The watching.
Yeah, I'll listen. I'll listen to not the whole, all of it, everyone start to finish, but just to see how things come across.
Right.
Did it sound okay? Did I mic the piano okay? Or things like that too.
Mm. Well, okay, I understand that. Because Mary's the same way. She refuses to listen to the podcast after we record them.
No.
Even though she's great on all of them, but she refuses to listen to them.
I hear the ums and the likes.
Mike. I do go back. I'm like, all right, did that sound right? There was a laugh here. I want to make sure it was captured correctly. I want to make sure everyone's mics were on throughout the entire thing, stuff like that.
More like the perfectionist, sort of.
Well, I'm definitely not a perfectionist, but I do want to make sure that the listeners, their ears aren't bleeding by the time we're done with this.
Fair enough.
I was thinking about your kids again and how they all kind of are musicians now. The reason I'm a photographer is because my dad was a photographer.
Oh, wow.
So that was this. So I entered my first photography contest in kindergarten.
All started in wrong kindergarten.
It's a shoebox, yeah.
That's amazing.
What do you want?
You took a picture of a shoebox?
No, we made a shoebox camera.
We
made a shoebox camera.
My bad.
I was thinking of that. I was wondering. I'm glad you asked that question.
Back in the film days, there was a way of...
We did that as a project.
They were called pinhole cameras.
That's right.
Nice. Yeah. So it was a great way. It was a great way of sort of understanding the rudimentary aspects of photography by creating your own shoebox one. Mm-hmm. Or you could do it out of, you could also do one out of a coffee can.
Okay.
Any sort of box that would contain light or keep out light. Right.
Now we just give kindergartners smartphones.
That's exactly what we
do.
Yeah,
right?
So much easier.
People don't need you and I anymore, Mike, with our digital photography.
No, I disagree. Because there is a lot of good photographers out there, but all of it requires apps and filters and stuff like that. Being able to, particularly if you shoot sports, as you well know, Mary, that's something a cell phone can't do. We can. You might be able to create.
You say that now till 2 years there's some
I would love it, actually, because I'm getting tired of carrying around all my gear all over the place.
The gear is something else.
I'd be fine with that. But I spent a lot of money on that gear, so I'm going to keep it for a little while. Molly, we didn't talk about your day job.
My day job.
I have a great fondness for what you do, because my father did something similar. You're a special ed teacher.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I went to school at Marywood University, and I had a few special education jobs, but most recently I've been working for Burlington County Special Services and now Camden County Ed Services, and they send us out to the local private schools, so a lot of times I get the privilege of working in a Catholic school, which is such a neat, you know, mix of, you know, working in the public sector and having a pension and things like that, but also getting to, you know, to work in a faith-based environment is a real gift, because it feels just more like family and community. So I get to provide extra help for students who maybe are struggling in reading, writing, or math and just need a little bit of reinforcement. So I like working with small groups and kind of getting to know my kiddos.
Well, I know we were talking about it before we started. I was in the special ed classes when I was younger because of, I forget exactly, whatever test results came back said I needed some help in, I think it was in math. And I would go out to the trailer. I loved that. I loved going out.
I learned what a trailer was before this podcast.
Yeah.
My son for a couple of years did that stuff. And actually, for people like me, it was great because it gave me a little extra help.
Just in that small group, you can ask questions without feeling like all eyes are on you.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I really could have used that help in college too, but probably for other reasons. but I definitely needed at least a tutor.
What are the ages that you teach, or does it vary?
Yeah, so typically it's been K through 8, so it can be a lot to juggle during
the
year when your day goes from like a first grade reading class to an eighth grade math class. It's you know, trying to keep everything straight is a little tricky, but keeps me on my toes, and I'm kind of good on my feet like that. So
good.
The other thing I want to ask was kind of just going back to the mass itself and all the intricacies of it. You kind of sidestepped my original question, which was, how have you gotten up to date? I know you know where to find the information, but you do seem to have a lot of it retained in your head now.
Oh,
how did you get this job?
How did I get this job? Just by doing this job, really. You know, I think the experience, you know, you learn how to do these things over the years by needing to do it in your parish and learning how to do it. I don't want to say the right way, but learning to do it well, you know, like you don't necessarily need to read through the whole ritual liturgical book, but but you read the introduction, you know, you get the theology behind why we're doing this ritual, the insight behind why we're doing it this way. What's the need for it? When do we use this versus that? You read through these things over the years and you get to know it. I grew up primarily being a musician, but there again, being a pastoral musician, you're not just dropping songs at certain places, and I never wanted to treat it that way. I always wanted to learn more and understand how everything's connected, even just musically, and then so you learn more of about the rituals over the years and go deeper into the whys and the hows, and of course take some classes and attend some conferences and workshops and things, to deepen your understanding of it. So,
well, I've been insulting you for the past 49 minutes probably, but I do want to give you one compliment. Begrudgingly.
Yeah, right.
Begrudgingly. The truth of the matter is, since Mike came on board a year or two ago, 2 or 3 years ago maybe, there has been a noticeable, now I won't go so far as a change in the liturgy with the bishop does, but I'm going to go. There's been a change in the liturgies of the bishop, and I think one of them is your choice of music. I think a lot of times it seems like parishes or dioceses, it's either every mass is a funeral dirge or every mass is a hippy dippy 70s song that I want to rip my own ears off if I hear it again.
Oh my gosh.
We're not judging.
Don't hold back.
There's no judgment here, though.
And people have different preferences. I mean, it's hard to find something that everybody likes.
What I was going to compliment Mike for, because Mike has done an outstanding job of threading a needle and bringing in a lot of different musical elements.
Very, very true.
This perfect balance, like every mass that you've been a part of with the bishop has been absolutely enjoyable. And I find it very difficult to criticize your musical choices, though I try. But it's really been great. So as we wrap up, I just want to let Mike know you're doing a fantastic job. And I happen to know from the bosses that you're doing a fantastic job.
Amen.
Molly, we pray for you daily because you have to put up with Mike. But we but we also are so thankful that you agreed to sing with him during the live streams. And you've been a great benefit to the diocese as well.
Thank you.
I get excited every time I get to see you because you're an absolutely wonderful person, even for someone as small as you.
Wow.
Couldn't go out without one last little dig.
So Mary, thank you very much for co-hosting with me today. And to everyone, all our listeners, thank you for joining us. And we'll be back with another episode next week. See you, everybody.